Okay, today's podcast overlaps a little from what we talked about yesterday, but we'll not go through everything that we did yesterday as well. But we can start with these five practices in managing benefits. And the first one that we looked at it yesterday. It's called identify and quantify. And the objective behind this identify and quantify cycle, this circle of practices, so we have identify and quantify, and the objective here is to lay the basis, the grundlag, lay the basis for informed options analysis, investment appraisal, and portfolio prioritization. That's the main overview of this, and what actually happens in this is that there's a lot of workshops. There's workshops to do benefits mapping. We looked at benefits discovery workshops, and we saw there's a different, we're trying to create this clear line of sight between the strategic goals and the initiatives, the projects, and looking for to get these strategic drivers in place. These strategic drivers help us do this driver-based analysis to be able to link the strategic goals and the benefits up to the initiatives. Other techniques used in these benefits discovery workshops are the SWOT and the PESTEL. And the SWOT, where we start with some form of strategy we want to reach, and we do these strengths and weaknesses and opportunities and threats, where we try to create the weaknesses to the strengths and we try to get rid of the threats and boost the opportunities. And we have this PESTEL appraisal. PESTEL stands for political, economic, social, technological, legal, and environmental factors. So it's just another appraisal that we can do on initiatives in some form of benefits discovery workshops. Benefits mapping, we also discussed. And benefits mapping, usually we can do some form of logic chain approach. And we looked at some different logic chains. And we can the logic chain show how the initiatives result in the benefits and the strategic objectives. So we have this link between them. And in the book, we saw this example of a results chain. That was on page 63 in the book. We have this results chain. And we have the circles, which are outcomes. We have the rectangles, which are initiatives. And we have these assumptions represented as octagons on the results chain diagram. We also have these benefit dependencies maps and benefits logic maps. MSP uses the terms project outputs, increases capabilities which deliver outcomes which results in benefits. And that's also something that's mentioned in the book, how MSP does this. The benefits dependency network goes from, it's a different way, but it links up the different dependencies and what they're dependent on. We also have benefits logic maps, which starts with the end in mind again. The key principles start with the end in mind. And the benefits logic maps goes from strategic drivers to investment objectives to end benefits to intermediate benefits to the solutions. Also a part of this identify and quantify practice, we have this customer and user insight. So how to get customer insight. And we looked at the voice of the customer, looked at visiting customers, creating stories with customers, being on site with customers, creating focus groups, ethnography. If you want to study gorillas, a couple of focus groups with gorillas, an email survey and a few interviews probably won't be enough. If you really want to study gorillas, live with gorillas. That's basically what it's saying in the book. We have this example of mystery shoppers, been able to find out different problems that exist that can lead us to identify some form of benefits. And then we jump over to the quantify part, quantifying the benefits. And one thing we have to be really careful when we're quantifying these benefits are all of these different cognitive biases that we have. And there were listed up many of these in the book in this chapter. Example, confirmation bias, planning fallacy, availability bias, groupthink, the loss aversion, anchoring, biases around probability, and this confusion between correlation and causation, cause and effect. We also looked at this form of how to get more reliable benefits forecasting. We need strong leadership. We start with the end in mind. We have this accountability framework in place where we're asking people to sign an honor code to build up this honesty about benefits, so that we're not going to cheat on the benefits, that we set a target and we really go what we do what we can to reach the target. And we want these benefits to be validated. Other things we looked at were evidence-based forecasting, where we're looking at getting reference class forecasting, trying to get that in, doing some form of independent reviews, basing our forecasting on empirical evidence. All at the same time, we're being careful about this. If we think that we have to be aware of the Hawthorne effect, that things are going to improve no matter what we do. If people know we're going to start measuring them, performance will improve. We looked at the Delphi technique of this wisdoms of the crowd. Delphi technique can help combat this groupthink idea where things get anchored. We have to be aware of this performance dip that. When we're talking about this quantifying benefits, that we take into account that there will be some form of performance dip before it gets better again. And the last section was on this enhancing the reliability of forecasts, where we have this probability estimating, sensitivity analysis, and this PERT evaluation. PERT, which stands for project evaluation, that's the PE, R stands for review, and T stands for technique, so we have PERT. That's the optimistic outcome plus the pessimistic outcome plus 4 times the most likely divided by 6. You do not need to know that formula for any exam, but that's what it is. Then we moved on to the next chapter, chapter 6 in the book, which was all about value and appraise. And the objective behind this chapter of value and appraise are to ensure that resources are allocated to change initiatives that individually or collectively represent the best value for money. And this value, we were talking about how to value and what to value, or how to value. It was covering the financial benefits, which is basically about money, the efficiency benefits, reducing time spent on different areas in the workplace, and non-financial benefits, for example, customer satisfaction. Then we went on to the appraisal part, and there's 4 different techniques used in the book. We have the cost-benefit analysis, which quantifies in monetary terms the costs and benefits of initiatives to figure out whether it's worthwhile to spend the cost to get the benefits. And we looked at terms like payback, accounting rate of return, the net present value, the internal rate of return, the hurdle rate of return. We looked at the WACC, this weighted average cost of capital, which is the average percent of what's owed. So the difference between the example we saw in the book of equity and debt. We looked at the different how to calculate out this required return. And one of the approaches we saw for this is the capital asset pricing model. So we were able to use the formula of required return, and is the risk-free rate plus the beta multiplied by the rate return minus the risk-free rate, which we saw an example of in the book, and we were able to figure out what was what. The example in the book is wrong, calculated out is wrong. And we looked at the table 6.1 of the discounted cash flow, where we had the different table rows in the table of costs and benefits, the annual net flow, the cumulative net flow, discount factors and devaluation around discount factors, the yearly or annual NPV, and the cumulative NPV. And all of this, and we also looked at the different approaches to this, the economist approach and the management approach. Sensitivity analysis, whereby changes to different variables in the table are made, and to see how that affects what we should, the result, basically, what we should be investing in, what type of answers we get back. Another technique we looked at was real options analysis. Real options analysis, where we have these different options, real options, not really financial options yet, but the options of expanding. A project is built with excess capacity, which can be utilized if demand grows. So that would be expand, and the opposite is contracting. And we have switch, so we're able to switch back and forward between this expand and contract. We have upgrade, where we have in a contract where we have this option to upgrade. Seen a lot in IT and development projects. We have defer, where we can wait on delay the start of a project until it's more favorable to deliver the project. Abandon, for a project is cancelled during its life. And sequencing, which the option to deliver a sequence of projects based on the outcome of what has happened before. Then we went on to look at this cost-effective analysis. And the cost-effective analysis, the rule behind cost-effective analysis is that all things being equal, accept the option with the lowest net present cost. And this net present cost being a negative NPV, which represents in current value terms the cost of realizing the non-financial benefits. So basically, all things being equal of what we want, choose the lowest price. And we, the example we talked about this is buying a television, where we make these criteria. And if everything's equal, everything's checked, then we buy the lowest one. But then some form of biases play in as well. We have to watch out for those. Well, then we looked on at multi-criteria analysis and these different weightings to consider the attractive, to calculate out the attractiveness and the achievability of the different scores we can get for on achievability and attractiveness. And then we can put those onto some form of bubble matrix to be able to visualize the different appraisals that we see for different initiatives. We talked briefly about this value management function analysis, the FAST diagrams, what FAST diagrams look like. And FAST shows it's different diagrams representing functions, how initiatives are delivered and why they're delivered. So we end up with some form of diagram just showing visualization instead. We talked about this value for money ratio. It divides the value index by the resources or costs required to deliver. The value index and value for money ratio, page 95 in the book. And we this about the this using value management in this practice, and how they're mutually supportive of each other. Then that was the value and appraise practice. We went on to chapter 7, which was the plan practice. And the plan practice has this objective of ensuring accountability and transparency for realization of identified benefits. The changes in which they are dependent, mitigation of disbenefits, and identification and leveraging of emergent benefits. So to say that simpler, we're going to be planning to make sure that we have the people, the documentation in place to check that benefits happen, and we identify and we jump on these things called emergent benefits, which jumps out along the way. So we differentiate between forecasted benefits and emergent benefits. And the plan practice has 7 main elements to it. It has validating the benefits forecast, it has prioritizing the benefits, managing pre-transition activity, selecting appropriate benefits measures, managing benefits threats and opportunities, and planning effective stakeholder engagement and communications. And I'll go through those. So the first one, validating the benefits forecast. And what we saw, the two of the techniques that could be used for that is this dog that did not bark test. What is not, asking much better questions about what's not included in the business case as opposed to only asking the questions on what's included in the business case. So which benefits are not included and why they're not included. And the other technique of booking these benefits, booking benefits in forecasts, booking benefits ahead in plans and visualizing them, holding people to account for the benefits. I think it holds a lot more accountability if we're going to book benefits instead of just letting people say this will probably happen. So we want to book them. The next element is this prioritizing the benefits. And the techniques we have around that are this 80-20 Pareto rule. The relative priority, being able to prioritize by relative evaluation, and pairwise comparison. And we discussed those three options today. The third element is managing transition. And managing transition has a very simple checklist to be able to go through. Has all of this happened? Has the business change manager? Has the business change manager agreed for the transition to happen? This change readiness that we talked about today. Is the business unit change ready? Managing pre-transition also covers communication required and a plan B, what to do if this transition doesn't work as planned. What's the plan B? This contingency planning, as it's called. The fourth element in this plan practice is selecting appropriate benefit measures. And we talked a lot about the different types of benefit measures, and we talked about why we measure, and there's lots of different types. We discussed the leading and the lagging. We discussed the direct and the indirect efficiency measures, effective measures. We talked all about these different measures today. And we discussed the difference between forecasts and measures. Where forecast, it says in the book, get your forecast realistic and make sure that your targets are motivational. If your targets are not motivational, then people will end up just falling back to the most simple regression to the mean cognitive bias, where we just fall back to the old ways of working. And another way of getting these appropriate measures are painting this rich picture, telling stories and getting explaining why we need these measures to get these benefits. The fifth element was about threats and opportunities and risk management. So we're talking about risks and what risks we're looking for, what risks we're not looking for, and all about this unknown unknowns, and be aware that we do not always know what we don't know. So what we don't know, we will always not know until we do some form of discovery workshop where then we change some of these unknown unknowns to known unknowns. And anything that jumps up along the way, any opportunities that pop up, make sure to use this technique of scout and beacon, where we're scouting around looking for opportunities and how to exploit these different opportunities, these good risks that pop up, not only the threats but the opportunities. So scout around, find opportunities, and light up these beacons. The sixth element was stakeholder engagement. And stakeholder engagement, we talked about stakeholder analysis. We talked about this CPIG, these different sections of stakeholders, where we have customers, we have providers, we have influencers, and we have this governance. Being able to analyze stakeholders and plot them in, even with them in workshops, to be able to plan out this stakeholder engagement. Because there's nothing more annoying than sending out lots of communication to the wrong stakeholders. They'll stop reading the communication after a while. So you want to make sure that all communication is better communication because it's directed towards those stakeholders. We looked at the power influence matrix, and where we want to stop people that have power, have influence, falling back to being merely spectators, as it says in the book. We want to stop that. And we're basically looking to excite stakeholders, keep them engaged, not just informed. We want to keep them engaged. How to keep them engaged? Keep them start focus groups. Get them excited to be a part of this. Then we looked at the seventh element of plan, which is this documentation. Which is, we looked at the benefits realization strategy, we looked at the benefits realization plan, and the benefit profiles. And we mentioned how those were brought into projects and how into programs, and the portfolio perspective around this as well. We looked at the business case and the five the five focus areas, the five case focus areas for the business case. We have the strategic business case questions. It does this business case link up to our strategic objectives? We have this financial business case. We have the commercial business case, the economic business case, and this, are we actually able to deliver this delivery and management business case? Behind all of these practices, we have these seven principles. And the seven principles are aligning these benefits with strategies. And to do that, we need to start with the end in mind. That's principle number two, start with the end in mind. So number one, align benefits with strategy. Number two, start with the end in mind. Number three, utilize successful delivery methods like MOP, portfolio management, like MSPs, managed successful programs, like Prince2, like Agile. Use successful delivery methods to deliver the outputs, to increase the capabilities, to get the benefits. Number four was integrate the benefits with performance management. We want, if we have this performance management function who's operating with balanced scorecards, who's operating with KPIs, with critical success factors, we want to integrate benefits with this function. We don't want to do something different, because if people are being measured by balanced scorecards, we want to make sure that that's integrated with the benefits to get the full benefits expected. Number five is managing benefits from a portfolio perspective. So being able to not managing benefits from the project perspective, where every benefit and every project is important at the, on the, from the inside, but from the outside, looking down and being critical and seeing, do these initiatives actually deliver benefits to the strategic goals? So we want to have that from a portfolio perspective, also using the portfolio roles of the investment committee, the progress group, the benefits manager, and the portfolio director, and the business change manager, has been able to use those roles to help get out these, to realize these benefits. We also want to be able to use the, we talked a bit today about these different, about the different documents down in the project and Prince 2. Why do we write highlight reports? Because from the portfolio perspective, we're looking for this one version of truth. The one version of truth, which is a lot easier to get if everybody's reporting in the same format. Apply effective governance is extremely important, that we need all of these processes, procedures, frameworks, strategies. We need them all in place to be able to get this the most of the benefits out. And the last one is develop a value culture, where again we're back at this value. This is not box ticking, more documentation framework. This is creating real value of something called benefits. So those were the different things that we went through today. And tomorrow we'll be, or if you're listening to this on day three, then we'll be moving on to the next chapters. We'll be looking at, we also looked some more of these cognitive biases today. And tomorrow we'll be starting looking at realize. We've already covered a lot of this realize chapter about booking the benefits, about creating these contracts of accountability, of creating this rich picture of one version of the truth and managed by exception if there's a threat to realizing these benefits. We're going to be talking about transition management and tracking of benefits, optimizing benefits, realism in planning, enthusiasm in delivery, forecast being realistic, targets being motivational. We'll be looking at that in this realized chapter. And then the review chapter, where we'll be looking at staged release of funding. We already mentioned that today. Pre-mortems, where we pretend we're at the end of a project and looking back and what went wrong, why did we not get the benefits? So we'll be looking at pre-mortems. We mentioned that yesterday. In-flight reviews, we mentioned today, how to do reviews in-flight and not only at the end of the initiatives. We'll be looking at post-implementation reviews and post-investment reviews, two different types of reviews. Post-implementation, how it actually went with implementing the new products, increasing the capabilities, delivering the outcomes. How did these processes work? And the post-investment, so checking the actual was it worth the money. So, and we do this review at the start of benefits, of managing benefits. We do it in flight. And we do it at the end, and we're looking all along the way for value for money. And behind all of this, we have these four key obstacles to managing benefits. We mentioned yesterday, we had them on the board yesterday, of this knowing-doing gap, which seems to be increasing, so we have to start doing something. We spoke about that this morning, about how to implement managing benefits. And this, by starting holding workshops, starting on a small scale, doing driver-based analysis, be careful of box ticking. Benefit managing benefits is not about box ticking. It's much more about engagement. It's much more about benefits-led workshops. So it's not more documentation. Be careful of this planning fallacy. Everything does not go according to plan, even though we like to think at some time. And be careful of strategic misrepresentation, that we think that what we're doing is delivering to strategic goals when in some cases it may not be. So that's the end of today's podcast, what we covered today, and also of some of what we covered yesterday. And I've got no dry jokes for Geraldine. So that's it for today.